Welcome, Jurassic fans, to your 146th episode of your rather nerd podcast. I'm Daniel, your host, and now the man who's died in hidden adventure more times than you can count, Matthew Millen.
Hey, that's not okay. It's true. Hello, everyone. I missed being here talking gibberish and nonsense with Danny Boy.
Yes.
It is scorching afternoon. How are you today, good sir?
I hate this here.
Yes.
Oh, this country, man. What a tragedy.
What a tragedy. Yes.
You know.
Not only we're poor, we also suffer from heat.
Yeah.
Lovely.
And let us just remember a detail that is we live in the coldest state of this country. And it's still 32 degrees Celsius?
Yep. How much is that in Fahrenheit?
Oh, you're going to help our American friends? All right, please do it.
Let's see. It's 89.6 Fahrenheit here.
Wow. Okay.
And this is the coldest state in the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're basically doomed. That's what we are. But you know what? It's a lot of fun in here. You know, we have a cool life. Matthew is a vet, a pretty successful one to that. So.
Yeah, no.
Look.
But we're living, right?
You walk the whole day with your cells, all right? You can look at them in the microscope and you go, hey, cells, how are you today?
Okay. Okay, you won. You won this one. Okay.
All right, we also have some housekeeping to do. Matt, we got some we got a message. So
yes,
can you read that one for us? Let me give you a deal on it.
Yes, sir. This message is from Miss Kristen Hundley. I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name. And she wrote us, hi, I just found your podcast and I just wanted to say I'm really digging it so far.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Kristen. Having that kind of feedback is pretty amazing.
It is indeed. And you guys, we are at Jurassic Fans Podcast on Instagram. You can DM us, you know, just whatever you feel like talking. Just another day, one of you called me at 4 a.m. to vent about relationships.
I was
and stuff.
Probably sleeping at that time, but sure.
I'm
then
sure you will.
Boy is always there for us.
Yeah, so you know, just do the heck out of it. We are there for you. All
yes,
right, guys.
Send us cat photos as well. Send us your pets, your memes, your dad jokes. And yeah, we love that.
All of that. So but she also said that she was about to listen to the episode that I had recorded with Bio Gojira. We did that a few months ago. It was about the last episodes of Camp Cretaceous, season 5, I suppose.
Oh, wow. She's already there? Or is she listening it randomly?
I hope she's not listening to the pretty old ones because those are crappy. Because
yes, the beginnings are always hard.
Yeah, our audio was not the very best back at that time. Now it's quite professional.
Especially when I was using that broken microphone for like, I don't know, 6 months or so.
I was using the laptop mic and I was just listening to it the other day. It is so cringy, you know, because you were listening to a radio and it sounded like you were on the cell phone. So.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, I still had to use some effects to change your voice. Remember that on the last chapter of our story, you did some voices on the phone?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I actually used Audacity to cancel a few sound waves and highlight others. So then it sounds like you're on the phone.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that existed.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's a feature on
You've
Audacity.
You've become quite the editor.
Oh.
That folks, is hours and hours of insomnia and hard work.
Yeah. And you guys, this is only available on the podcast because if you're listening to this episode on YouTube, it's just the story. So you don't have this amazing introduction that we were doing right now. all of this
Yes, if you want
chit-chattering.
to listen to us sing, I don't know, random things and saying bad stuff about our lives. Yeah, I mean, come on, you guys would love it.
Yeah, but
Come
like
listen to us.
I know that the YouTube watchers are not really into all of these talking because they want to watch some content actually. But look
Oh,
at
okay.
us. We're just two dudes like telling a dinosaur story. You have your beer. I got some iced tea here because that describes our personalities, our individual
Yes, I
traits.
think it is well suited for us.
Right. A beer and a
My
nicer tea.
coffee is over. I have to go buy more.
How about your bloody caffeine Coke? Coca-Cola, you guys.
Yes, Coca-Cola, not Coke. Coke, but not Coke,
Do
okay?
you think there is something Spotify will cancel me. Do you think there is cocaine with caffeine?
I really don't know.
Now they
Don't do
have
drugs, kids.
don't do it. No, like do candies. Right? Just get pretty fat, but don't do drugs.
Yep.
Anyways, now they have become a menace to the public. Let's then get started with our story. Today we are doing chapter 14 of our story. Yes, indeed.
What page is it?
Let me see here.
I'm not like that here.
Oh, you've already found it?
No.
Oh, okay. Let's
I'm
just
still scrolling down.
why don't you search for chapter 14 on the search
Oh
tool?
my God, you're a genius.
Oh, why? There you
Here we are, page
go.
79.
Yay, the guilt of a victim. All right. So let's get started with this. So we have President Frost, which is you, Lucy Lane, which I'll be doing today, but Larry is about to come back next week. She's on the beach today, you
Larry,
guys. Yeah.
she's having some time off with sun, the sea,
And
seagulls,
her dancing queen.
and her dancing thing.
Yes,
Yes.
indeed. All right,
Or
but
would it be better dancing queen?
oh, because it's a man. Oh,
Yes.
brother.
Creating new words.
Maybe that's kind of the new fad, so why not?
Yeah, why not? I mean, Shakespeare did a lot of them, so why
Yes,
not?
right. And so did Dr. Seuss.
Oh,
Seuss.
yeah, him as well.
All right, guys. I mean, even a word that is in our title, nude, that's a doctor that Dr. Seuss created.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he said that there were a few nerds, and a nerd was a little monster that he created. So people started using that for people like us.
I feel yes, I think Little Monster is a well-suited title for us.
We don't feel attacked by that. All right.
No, definitely not.
That's a piece of legacy right there. All right,
Yeah.
guys. And so we have Kevin O'Reilly, which is also you, and Dr. Keane, which is me because I want to do the villain. All right. So whenever you feel like starting, Matt. Chapter 14, The Guilt of a Victim. There is no need to describe the stops we made before reaching our destination, the scorching temperature that hit my face when I went down the plane staircase, or even the bureaucracy that goes on when arriving anywhere. What is of interest, though, is the description of the beautiful mountains that surrounded the background of the scenery, as well as the diverse culture that we had so little time to enjoy and be a part of. Jacob Keane immediately set off in search of the present while we dined at a shopping center restaurant on Dock Road. As we had agreed, he soon reappeared, bringing with him the elderly Mr. Frost, who was still trembling slightly. Amidst the celebratory shouts from the soccer fans surrounding us in that Scottish pub, we started talking again. "So, Mr. President, we're all right. You didn't want us to bring the samples to an accessible island," I introduced. Sitting before me, the dean had a low frown and blinked as if weighing the gains and losses of speaking openly. Fearing that he had not heard me amidst the deafening sound of those who yelled, watching humans kick a ball, I thought about repeating the question, but the idea sounded offensive. At the end of what might have been 2 whole minutes, he finally nodded and returned the customary smile to his sympathetic face, which was already suffering from the sagging skin that accompanies old age. Then he answered me, "Yes, Kevin, and it's good to see that you still remember the title from the library." "That's very kind of you, sir, but it was actually Lucy who noticed that there was something strange in the method you sent us."
"Well, well, our little girl inherited her father's immense intelligence, I see,"
he observed, turning his face to Lucy, whose cheeks were now pink with embarrassment. Frost's tiny eyes then rested on King, and he asked him,
"And you, our good Dr. King, were kind enough to escort these children here then, huh?"
King simply replied with a close-lipped smile, just to confirm the fact. Feeling that something else should be said, I added, "Actually, Dr. King paid for our tickets so that we could come."
"He did, didn't he?"
The dean's eyes locked onto King's for a moment, as if they could read his thoughts. So small was the opening that his eyelids still gave, no sign of a sclera could be seen, only the pupil and the iris, as deep blue as the ocean.
"Funny," he continued without taking his eyes off the British man. "I've ordered a lot to give you in an envelope with the sum sufficient for the tickets and all the additional expenses."
King remained impassive despite the strange direction the conversation was taking.
"Perhaps it's forgotten. Young people today can be as short of memory as us old people, can they, Dr. King?"
"Certainly," answered the other. Left out of sense and reason, Lucy and I exchanged discreet glances, not yet understanding what was happening there. Slowly turning his face towards us, he enunciated his words.
"As you said, I'd like that evidence, and yes, children, I call it evidence, not samples, to be taken to an accessible island, where it will be safe."
"Safe? Is there any danger for them?"
Lucy said.
"You know, this is not the first time that Anthony has found what he was looking for. It was only the first time that he would bring some convincing evidence. Unfortunately, it's been a while that anything that is brought back has been misplaced or simply destroyed. By the way, Jacob, I can call you Jacob, can I?" "Of course I can, after so many years of seeing your face in the corridors. I heard from Alan that you brought an important piece of evidence in your backpack. Surely you have it with you?"
"Oh, I'm afraid that when we were fleeing in a wooden boat about to be torn to pieces, some sea water splashed onto the sample. The damage was essentially irreparable."
"What?"
shouted Lucy, rising from her chair and staring firmly into King's face.
"Are you saying that the only thing we could use to give some dignity to my father's memory has been destroyed?"
This outburst of enthusiasm on Lucy's part would have been very frightening had not been for the huge wave of shouts that followed her question, all celebrating a scored goal.
"Now calm down, little girl,"
King returned, pulling a round-rimmed pair of glasses from his pocket over his nose. "Was it my fault that the water got into the backpack? Wasn't it you, Kevin, who left it open after checking my binoculars? And wasn't it on your orders, Lucy, that he unzipped it?" Thinking about King's question and slowly bringing her gaze to the floor, Lucy sat down again. I was also thinking now, and the conclusion was obvious. It was my fault what had happened. I opened the backpack and exposed its contents to the wild waves that battered our tiny boat that night. All was lost. Lane was dead, and his memory would be buried in the empty coffin that would bear his name. We were both defeated. I'm sure we looked defeated too. With the silence of the end of the game, with the man now seeking animation in quieter things like drinking and contemplating their miserable lives, the president went on to say,
"No, it's a huge shame indeed what happened, Jacob, but you know what? You don't have to feel so blue, children. There is more evidence. I felt Kin shudder slightly when he heard this.
Other evidence?
Cheered Lucy.
Yes, indeed. As I said, much of it has been mislaid or destroyed, but there is more. There are certain pieces that Lane kept in his own pocket, or that I brought back myself when I was his assistant.
And why did my father never show it to the world?
Well, of course he did. Do you really think he would miss the opportunity to prove he was right about a matter? Anthony spent very little time with you. In fact, I'm afraid I also hired too many nannies instead of educating you. Fearing that Lucy was about to get up again, I changed the direction of the subject. So, what exactly is there on an inaccessible island? A group of elders that Anthony met and who agreed to guard what he described to them as a treasure. Elders? You don't mean the...
Yes, Kevin.
The island council. It is to them that one must give all personal details when landing there. And I'll tell you, those people ask the most scrutinizing questions. We will have to ask their permission to stay overnight, especially since they don't know you too yet. But Lane's name will be enough to make a good impression. Isn't it necessary to contact the administrator as well?
Why yes, a month in advance, inform them of the date of the visit and its purpose.
Try to understand, young man, outside civilization has never done these isolated communities any good. Next to me, Lucy nodded her head in agreement.
But you don't have to worry about that. I myself dealt with the bureaucracy months ago. And all that is left for us now is to go there, in a month's time.
In a month? I repeated in frustration.
That's when the next ferry to Tristan da Cunha leaves. But cheer up, I have an expedition for both of you in the meantime.
For some reason, Lucy raised her face at this moment, rather interested in what she had heard. Perhaps her mind, which had been focused only on human affairs until then, had become more sympathetic to reptile studies after all.
What kind of expedition?
She asked with a fire that lit up her brown eyes. The three of us showed some surprise at seeing such a cheer, but in no way was this a bad sign. With a laugh, Frost complimented her.
Well, that's the spirit! Let me tell you then what we were told.
This account is quite recent. In fact, it was a phone call I answered in the lab during the days you were in Mbunji. The voice on the phone did not identify itself, as of course it would not, given the details of the case. Before going on with the description, Frost made sure he had our full attention, then leaned forward and continued talking.
There is a nature reserve called Luleka, surrounded by a few tiny villages. Recently, though, a residential condominium has started to be built a bit too close to the reserve, shall we say.
After a long wink that reinforced the irony of the sentence, the story continued.
The surroundings are not finished yet, but the builders of the complex found some pretty old tiny animals on the verandas that had the lights on. They were described as the offspring between a snake and a turtle.
I reacted then saying, but that's...
bizarre,
Lucy added.
I agree, children, but you know from experience that you can't dismiss unusual reports. Here are the details we have collected and the exact location of the event,
concluded the president, handing me an information sheet. As soon as I grabbed the document, Jacob Kin jumped up from his chair and ordered,
Excellent! Thank you for the information, Mr. Frost. We'll leave immediately. It's great to see such a good mood, Dr. Kin. Well, I'm afraid we should stay here overnight so that the children can get some rest, and in the morning we will leave.
Nonsense, Kin replied with a forced smile. You know how children are. They have endless energy. You see, if at your age you could make it through the trip without having a stroke, I'm sure they'll be fine. Saying this, he snatched the document and dashed it towards the door as we jumped up to follow him through the crowds flooding the Cape Town International Airport. Leaving the gate of the restaurant, the three of us took turns looking for the man, but the place was insanely busy with people. Lifting her eyes further, Lucy pointed to a spot among the groups scrambling to find their counters and luggage. Following the direction she was pointing, I identified the glint of Kin's hair, too drenched by the gel he was using to smooth out his waves. Heading for the airport exit, Kin looked more suspicious than ever,
as if he planned to steal the details of the expedition from us. We two waded through so many people, dodging elbows and suitcases flying around in luggage carts, leaving Frost far behind. Looking at him for a second, I saw the Dean making a monumental effort to keep up with us, but his breath would not allow it anyway. In the next instant, a few children came running up to him and tripped him up, before disappearing into the crowd once more. Without even realizing what had hit him, the president went unceremoniously to the ground, leaving only us to retrieve the document. When I looked again, the jail glow was already close to the exit, which also meant close to being lost forever. Outrunning me, Lucy shot between the last people blocking our way, on her face a slight expression of anger and determination, and she too disappeared from my view. Eventually, after getting through all the jungle that was that wild place, I reached what could only be called a clearing, a space in the middle of that urban forest, near the gates of the airport, where Lucy was firmly holding Kim's right arm. Reaching them at last, I heard her say with rapid breathing,
"Why were you going to steal the expedition documents?"
"Steal? Just because I'm faster than you doesn't mean I was stealing anything."
"Then why didn't you wait for us?"
"Because I don't want that rheumatic slug to go on this trip. Look behind you, he hasn't caught up with us yet." Lucy grabbed King's arm even tighter at that moment, before looking back, just to make sure he wouldn't run away. I know this because he screamed in pain at the same instant. Unfortunately, he was right. We saw no sign of the Dean, even though we waited for a while.
"Well, give me those papers,"
Lucy growled, snatching the expedition details from King's grasp.
"Let's go back and see what happened to Mr. Frost. He might want to repeat my question to you."
With that, she released his arm, which Keen was now massaging with a bitter expression. Slowly making our way back through the bustling crowd, we found Frost answering a call on his cell phone. With his back to us, he had his left hand brought to the back of his neck, as if a great deal of worry afflicted him. Turning towards us, still holding the phone to his ear, he had the marks on his face now even more outlined. "Mr. Frost, what happened?" I asked, afraid to know the answer.
"Anthony's lab is..."
"Yes?"
encouraged Lucy.
"It was destroyed."
"What?"
"What?"
we asked in unison.
"Allah said that a yellow truck drove into the walls and destroyed the building."
"Yellow? Was it Dave Young's?" I worried.
"Yes, Kevin, but he was not inside the vehicle. Someone had stolen the truck hours before. I need to get back to Athlios and sort this out."
Staring into Kin's eyes, he then concluded,
"Go to Lilica without me. It'll be fine. After all, I have the Master Builder's phone number, and I'll be in touch."
Frowning his forehead and the muscle around his mouth, he turned his back on us and left again for the counter, tapping his feet as he walked. We had an expedition to go on, just the three of us.